Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Tigers Minor League Report podcast here on Sunday nights. Rogelio was on his way. He was bowling some 200 games out there. Close. He came close a couple of times. It's me, Chris. That's Jerry over there. You know, you recognize Jerry from all the fine work he's doing with articles and deep data dives. Joey Witt's fastball arm spots and things of that nature and all the awesome Statcast data that he's compiled for us. But we're here. We're going to discuss the week that was in the minors. There's plenty of other baseball to talk about too. The Tigers are on a 9-game losing streak, seemingly losing in every way possible. Things honestly haven't been much better in the minors. We'll get into that. But there's also college baseball going on right now. Some pretty exciting college baseball. So it's a good baseball time of the year. It's just unfortunate that the Tigers, it seemed like they had some momentum there and fans were getting excited, and it just, the bottom completely fell out once Bradley Green and Eduardo Rodriguez got hurt. And it's, it's been tough to watch.
There's been a few times where it seems like they just want to lose. Like, obviously, but like the ways they're doing it, it's just insane.
No, it's exactly, I was thinking about that tonight. It's kind of the opposite of, when they're having that fun little stretch there and they came back and beat the White Sox twice after falling behind late. It felt like they didn't feel like they were out of it. They felt like they were going to win. And now it feels like the opposite. Like if they have a lead, it feels like, well, how are we going to blow it this time?
Right.
And A.J. Hinch wasn't messing around today. He put Alex Lang in the seventh inning, which, we've always thought he was going to do stuff like that. That's the kind of the smart manager, use your best reliever at the most, the highest leverage point. Mm-hmm. But even he still falls into the, like, okay, he's kind of our closer. We're going to use him when it's time to close. But not today. And, you can't really blame him, but it didn't work out. So, it's been tough. But, we got all sorts of stuff to talk about this week. There's been just a deafening chorus to call all sorts of minor league prospects up. Colt Keith had himself another monster week, and I put some data up too the other day. I took the just kind of a random selection of top 10 Tigers minor leaguers in various statistical categories with weighted runs created plus, home runs, runs, all that good stuff, just to give people, people who don't necessarily go to Fangraphs and look at that sort of thing. I thought it might be fun to share. But then, of course, the immediate feedback we got was, the top two guys at WRC Plus in the organization are Chris Myers and Justice Bigby, who are both 24-year-old late-round draft picks who have been playing really well in West Michigan. And so the immediate response was either, why are these guys still in high A? Or the Tigers suck. This is so lame to keep these guys in high A. Like, it was... I don't know, Jared. I don't know if you've ever sat around and thought about stuff like that, but I had a whole big diatribe I was going to go on. But I'd like to get your thoughts on things like that. Players, older players in lower levels.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at some of that too, because I was gathering some Colt Keith data myself to try to throw in there, and I was just looking, and I was like, these. Some 24-year-olds at high A, but they're names that people don't really know to begin with, and it's probably for a reason. These guys aren't in double A because this front office doesn't feel that they can handle that competition. And it is what it is. You're going to have people like that. That's how you fill out your organization.
Yeah, and so Alex, well, first of all, we got to say thank you to Blood Right again. Blood Right, actually, he said he had to take off, but he did give us $9, so exquisite and touch of all time, Blood Right. Thank you very much. He also said, I'm not even going to tell you what I bet on today, but thankfully, please God, let it in. But Alex Kent said, didn't they just get called up to Erie today? And yes, they did. Myers and Bigby did get called up. Maybe maybe that's why I put those things up there the other day. I don't want to reveal too much, but there was some inside intel, maybe. Maybe, I don't want to. But
that's what I get for saying stuff, you know. I missed out on that. I actually missed that news today.
Lynn Henning, I will say it was probably not supposed to come out until tomorrow or possibly even Tuesday, but Lynn Henning jumped the gun there with an article tonight on the minor league stuff. But my whole thing is, and this is just, it's been the case all year long, ever since, you know, Justin Henry Molloy got off to that crazy start in Toledo, and it's call him up. And like, I get it. This is something Rahelio and I were talking about on the way out to West Michigan. We went out to see Bo Brisky, his rehab start earlier this week, and then also caught Troy Melton again. And it's, I think there's kind of an obsession in this country with progress, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame anybody. It's probably not even this country, really. It's just in any capitalistic society.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I'm fine with capitalism. I'm not, you know, tanky up here or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, it's a world where an oil company can make $6 billion in a quarter and people are upset because they made $7 billion the quarter before. Mm-hmm. And you're still making ghastly profits, but it's not progress. And I just feel like sometimes it's just okay for guys to just stay somewhere and succeed for a little bit. You don't have it. They just don't have to constantly be thrown up to a new level and be challenged. And that's just kind of a general thought with guys like Myers and Bigby. There's a lot of things working against them. And it's kind of what you were talking about was, you know, they're generally considered more org guys, right? So Myers was a 13th round pick. Bigby was a 19th round pick. Doesn't mean that they can't turn into something. Mm-hmm. Kerry Carpenter was what, 18th rounder, I think?
Yeah, something like that. I know he's later.
Yeah, sometimes guys figure it out later. They get pro instruction. They get change their body. If you look at Chris Myers now, he looks like he's dropped 20 pounds and turned it into muscle. He looks a lot different than he did when he got drafted. But so part of it is that, but part of it is just like, it really is. There's two sides to every move.
Mm-hmm.
There's, if somebody's getting promoted, somebody else is getting demoted or cut.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not like, you know, cold, heartless fans can always just say like, cut him. He's not playing well. Well, we don't know everything that's going on in this person's life. We don't know, you know, what the organization has invested in these other players. Are they going to, so with Bigby and Myers specifically, those are guys who have only played first base and corner outfield. So are they going to go up to Erie? Are they just going to stop playing Jake Holton at first base, despite him having a 130 WRC plus and being a 10th round draft pick? So Ben Malgeri went on the injured list this week, so there is room in the outfield, and they have other guys. But it's like, you know, you go up and down the Erie lineup, and it's pretty strong right now. You could probably say, okay, we can replace Diego Rincones, except we're assuming that he's a Scott Harris guy because he was with Richmond last year in AA, the Giants AA affiliate, and then the Tigers signed him as a minor league free agent. So
yeah,
maybe he Scott Harris. Yeah, maybe, or maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he'll get rid of him. I don't know who what the corresponding moves are going to be. But it's like, you know, Gage Workman has one of the lower WRC pluses and Erie. Are they ready to give up on Gage Workman, their fourth round pick from a couple of years ago, who they gave a well over slot bonus to? So there's just a lot more to it than I think most fans care to think about or care at all, really. And I get it. Like, you just want to see guys move up. You want to see progress. You want to feel like something's coming because you've been watching historically bad Major League Baseball team for 5 years.
Well, kind of like you were saying earlier, you know, there's a human factor to this. You know, yes, somebody gets promoted, somebody has to get demoted. And when they get demoted, their confidence is going to take a hit. They could potentially lose what little livelihood they had with this, and they have to start a new career. You know, there's a lot of things that could happen to these guys, and it shouldn't really be rooting for, you know, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I get, you see a guy succeed, you want to see him continue on, but we have to keep that in mind.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we all want sports to be a meritocracy, right? Eventually, like, at least in the minor leagues, we want the guys who deserve to play more to play more.
Right.
It's never that black and white. There's always more going on. There's always, this guy's been playing through an injury because the team's making a playoff run. Like, he hasn't been performing, but he's gotten it out. There's just a lot more to it. And And I guess with the so-called Keith specifically, we can get into, because he's the guy who's absolutely tearing up AA, right? He's been on, he was a player of the month in May. He hasn't cooled off in any significant way.
Nope.
I think Stan here in the comments with a nice comment said in the article published today by Lynn Henning, he said, Colt Keith is going to get some outfield reps because Jace Young can only play second. We talked to Colt Keith before the season, and I kind of basically asked him, I said, I think you're going to have to go to the outfield. Tell me why I'm wrong. And he told me he'd been working really hard on his defense, and I think he's gotten himself to the point where he is an adequate third base, second base defender. He would probably be in the lower third in the major leagues defensively, but he wouldn't be such a liability that you couldn't play him there. But it certainly wouldn't hurt him to get some reps in the outfield. He's a much better athlete than people realize, I think, for being 6'3", 240 or whatever, 225 now. He's an average runner, maybe even above average underway. He's like a linebacker. It just doesn't necessarily translate into steals that often or anything like that. He's a really good runner underway. So I think he could be a good outfielder. And I also think that it's probably true that Jace Young probably can't play many other spots than second base. He's actually a pretty damn good second baseman. He's just got a really thick lower half. He's just kind of pear-shaped. And so he doesn't have a great like first step quickness, and he's well below average runner. But if he can get to the ball, he gets to it, he catches it, he throws it accurately. Like, he's a quality defender in that regard. It's just he's not going to have the world's best range. The one thing that I was thinking about, and there's all sorts of people speculating, like, oh, if Colt Keith had been a first round pick, he would already be up in Toledo or in Detroit or it's service time manipulation. And it's like, we're already past all the service time milestones for this year. Maybe they're being super weaselly about it for next year too. It's possible. I don't know. That would feel kind of odd to me. I don't think that Scott Harris is dumb and it's like, I don't think he's very good. It's possible he doesn't value Colt Keith the way the rest of Tigers fandom does.
Mm-hmm.
So my pure speculation, and we've talked about it a bunch of times, that we think that maybe they just want Erie to keep competing for the playoffs before they move him up. And that could still be the case. There's Rogelio. Do I need to add him, or is he going to add himself? I'll add him. Hi, Rod.
Hey. Hey, guys. Sorry about that. By the way,
it's all good. I've just been going on a diatribe about players, moving up and down in the system.
Or how about people that take – never mind. I'm not going to get into it. I'm going to take the high road. I'm going to take the high road. I sat on some news that somebody reported earlier and decided to –
Listen, it's fine. It's not huge news, so it's okay. But still, it's annoying that I got a text from Raj at 6 in the morning on Saturday telling me something. I'm like, oh, cool. We'll wait till they announce it, and we'll have something ready for that, and then it gets scooped. But my whole thing, we talked about that a little bit. I was talking about, people just constantly wanting players to get promoted and how it's never quite that easy.
Yeah.
I don't know if you see that Bloodright gave us $9 too, by the way. He's not here though, but.
Oh, okay.
So but, he's six wizards. Yeah. It's, uh-oh. But so anyway, my Colt Keith thoughts, and this is 100% pure speculation, but I feel like it's entirely possible that the Tigers and Scott Harris specifically have challenged Colt Keith to do something that he's not doing. Now he's tearing the cover off the ball. He's in for power. He's in for average, everything. My speculation, and again, 100% speculation, is that they know how good of a hitter he is. They probably want him to walk a little bit more. We know, like, what does Scott Harris love, right? That's all he dominated the strike zone. And Colt Keith, his plate discipline numbers are fine. 10% walk rate, 21% strikeout rate. But actually, that's below average walk rate in the Eastern League this year. Among players with 100 plate appearances, it's like 75th out of 120. He's actually 10th out of 12 on Erie alone. And again, there's nothing wrong with a double-digit walk rate at all. I'm just saying, like, if they think he's that talented, and we all think he's that talented, he could probably do what he's doing and walk 4 or 5% more and be just an absolute beast. And maybe that's what they want him to do, and maybe he's not doing it, so they're going to wait until he does it. Again, 100% speculation. Maybe it's something to do with defense. Maybe it's anything else. But I feel like it's completely fair that if the front office and Scott Harris has challenged Colt Keith to do something and he hasn't done it yet, then they could keep him at the level until he does it. That makes sense to me. Otherwise, I don't really know what the holdup is. But that's just my diatribe. Over and out. We'll continue with the show.
You know what? To add to that, I think you're probably onto something that, Chris, because if there's one thing we have noticed about this farm system or this recently, is essentially they have, I don't want to say they're flavors of the month, if you will. I think they're showing that they're kind of filtering out what we saw earlier with Chase Fry. Is it Chase Fry that got released?
Yeah.
Palacios. And the all of a sudden Daniel Cabrera's completely disappeared off the face of the planet. And we've seen the development camp be one of those things. And so I think there's something to that too. I mean, my quote unquote irresponsible speculation has nothing to do with service time either. It has nothing to do with service time. Greg Gagne did a really good job. The Erie Seawolves broadcaster did a really good job explaining that on Saturday, that there's some sort of conception or some sort of misperception that it has to do with service time. It has nothing to do with it whatsoever. I think Chris is on to something with that, because sure, Jerry, I'm sure you can look at some of the advanced numbers too. Is if he's not quote unquote controlling the strike zone to their flavor, then that's what it could be that. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, it's essentially a nitpick, right? But I feel like with a player as talented as Colt Keith, you might want to hold him to a higher standard because you feel like he can be like a great big league hitter, like a 4-win, 5-win big league hitter if he just does a little bit more. Otherwise, maybe he's a Nick Castellanos type hitter in the big leagues, which is fine, but maybe they think he can be better and they just want to see him prove it. Total speculation, like I said. I just feel like that would make more sense to me than any other reason we've heard, except maybe the whole playoff thing, but we kind of graded that, so who knows?
Yeah, I mean, again, it doesn't help either that Lynn Henning said, you know, Henning was talking about, like, well, not yet. Well, it's nice to know people and just literally phone it in when you want to, and just versus going in anyway. But go ahead, Chris.
Well, so Stan mentioned, right, I guess he read the article, that they're going to get Colt Keith some reps in the outfield because Jace Young can only play second base. He also mentioned here, though, this was something that I wonder if this comes from the article. I'm going to put it up here. I think I would try to put it up here. But he said something about, they say Parker Meadows needs to learn how to hit lefties while Badu is with the Tigers hitting. I don't know. Is that in the article? I'm just asking Stan if that's in the article or if that's something he's heard before, because we've talked about this before earlier this year, that Meadows is actually crushing lefties this year.
Yeah.
He can't hit righties for some reason. But in any event, sorry to interrupt. I was just I wanted Stan to maybe clarify that for me if he could.
Yeah. I mean, again, whether Henning pays attention or not, he would know. If he was paying attention, he would know that Parker Meadows is crushing lefties, and Stan is correct. Minor league options. He has, in terms of, he can be sent down, back down, Stan. So if, for example, if the team wanted to send him down the AAA, they could. So just to explain that. But as far as I'm concerned with, again, I think it's like one of those things that, no. And Stan mentions this here, that it's his observation. Gotcha. That the media keeps bringing it up. Got it. Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Listen to this media tell you that he's actually doing great against lefties this year.
Yeah.
He's not hitting terribly well against righties. But he had a pretty good week, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But
listen to media who actually watches and pays attention to games versus just calling somebody on a whim and then breaks news when you sat on something for 4 days. Am I bitter a little bit? That's no.
You got a bit of a grudge, Raj.
A little bit of a grudge.
I don't. Listen, you when you have a story and you're sitting on it because you're being nice and considerate, and there are players and teams and everything else involved. But whatever.
But by the way, just for clarification, for everybody who listens to this podcast and watches this, we sit on news for a couple days. On the Discord, sometimes we might hint at things. So for somebody to just come out and go, blah, 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 blah. And then when I ask my source about it and they say, I didn't say anything, then for a fact that this, and then that same source also called out the manager for not being transparent with the media.
Yeah.
All right. I'll get over this. It's
just
frustrating.
Yeah. Just one more thing Stan was talking about with the options. That has always been a little bit confusing to people because it makes you feel like, oh, they can only go back down one more time. It really ought to, what they should call it is option seasons, because you have players generally have three option seasons where they can go up and down back and forth between the minors multiple times. It's only one option year. Like if they do it once, that eats up an option, but then you can send them back and down. It used to be, infinite times, I think, during that season. I think they've capped it now at 5. I may be wrong there, but Maton has, since he's been on the 40-man, he's also gone back to the minors twice or been assigned to the minors twice. So those are two options gone. So he has one more, which means the Tigers could send him to the minors this year if they want to, but then next year they would have to keep him in the big leagues or just release him or waive him, I guess, or designate him for assignment and hope that nobody else picks him up. But hope that cleared it up a little bit. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah. Getting it cleared up once and for all. I promise I'm not gonna be bitter anymore. We're gonna move on. We're gonna be adults about everything. That's what we're gonna do. So, and Jerry's like, what the hell did I walk into?
I'd be mad too. So I get it. No worries. Right.
Okay. See, Jerry's smart enough to know what's going on. So I appreciate that. But have you guys discussed Toledo at all yet? Nope. Okay.
I came right in swinging about. We talked a little bit about the Tigers. I briefly mentioned college baseball because that's going on. And then I talked about the player promotion stuff.
Did you see how Oregon it was losing to Oral Roberts?
Are they? That series has been absolutely insane. That was,
yeah.
Oral Roberts was up 8-0, 7-0 in the first game and lost. It was the biggest comeback, I think, ever in Super Regional. And then last night, Oral Roberts won on a walk-off. Guy hit the ball, caught a quarter inch of chalk. The opposite way to go ahead. Ooh. So I didn't see what happened. Oral Roberts is a 4 seed. It would be one of the great Cinderella stories in College World Series history.
They were up earlier. I'm not sure what happened. I think they were coming back. I'm pretty sure that's what I saw. But some crazy stuff going on.
Yeah. So I tried to. I don't know. We should hopefully the Toledo slide works.
Yeah, it does. I'm trying to get it open right now. So.
I threw some stuff on there.
Yeah, I saw that. Thank you. Yeah.
I didn't know I could. Now I know that I can. So I
will help out. Really? It worked? Oh, sweet. Okay. Sweet.
But yeah, I don't know if you want to play the new intro that you were talking about, then feel free. Now's a decent time if we're going to start talking about level to level. Right.
Hey, if we're going up, okay. So if you guys, okay, fine. I can play I'll play the new intro. Why not?
Fires. Here's one into deep right field. We might have a game tied already. Way back near the Frickers building and off the building. It's a home run for Parker Meadows, and just that quickly the butt ends tied.
Tell me to get pumped for that. Don't tell me you did not get pumped watching.
That's awesome.
All right. What was that, Chris?
Or see anything.
So Oh. But yeah. Can you hear me? No, I didn't hear you that part. What would you say there? Oh,
I said I didn't hear or see anything that was just happening.
It
just
really?
Muted. Yeah.
Sure, you as saw long it, as other right? people.
Yeah. Yep. I
as long
saw
as other it, people right? could, that's fine.
All right. Well, so let's get started with Toledo here. Andre Lipsius has been picking up as of late, and Jerry, I'll get with you about this in a second. In terms of batted ball data on Lipsius and Meadows and Malloy, welcome Joe Rizzo, who the Tigers signed from Miami, I believe it was.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, we're obsessed with the Marlins now because this is the third transaction with the Marlins in less than a month.
Well, they have the third best record in the National League, so.
Yeah. They got great pitching. And Dane Myers, former Tiger, is ripping it up in AAA. Yeah. That one's a little bitter to swallow because we watched Dane Myers get so good last year, 2020 guy. But anyway, but the surprising stat of the week, though, for me was Jack Olofsgaard, 5 innings, 6 hits, 2 Ks in the win. He actually probably pitched the best start the Mudhens had all season.
Well, probably not all season, but definitely all week. I think Olsen's starts, his last two starts were probably better than that. But,
I should say over the last month or so, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was kind of shocking. Yeah, he's up there for basically to help out, we think, and he did his thing. So, yeah, congrats to him there. That's pretty cool to see. But, yeah, the rest of the pitching has been rough. We had the Matt Manning start today, 45 pitches, I think 1 2/3 innings, a couple hits, a couple walks. Didn't look particularly sharp, but also he's healthy, so that's all we really care about at this point.
Yeah, and the bullpen continues to struggle for Erie. Erie's bullpen has been just kind of really – Diaz, is, for example, the other night was he went in to close the game and just had a hard time. Also, he had two outs, and then almost had the bases loaded, I believe.
He's had three straight rough outings. The one I was watching, so they were up 5-1 the other night when Rizzo eventually hit the walk-off home run. They were up 5-1 in the night. Yeah. He gave up, I want to say, three consecutive doubles to score two runs. And then for whatever reason, Syracuse bunted. And it was a pop-up bunt. The third base caught it. Baseman caught it, doubled off the guy at second. So it was like, oh, it's two outs. They're going to get out of this. And then it was like two walks and two more singles, and it was tied. It was just it was a brutal meltdown. And then I think Lipsius got a hit, and then I think Rizzo won it for him. So it was – ended up getting the win despite pitching one of the worst innings of his life. But, yeah, he's just been struggling a bit. And that's a guy – like, we've seen glimpses of him look pretty good at times, but just not right now for sure.
So, Jerry, in terms of some of the batter-wise, just looking at the data, how is the hard hit contact with Meadows and Lipsius as of late?
You know, right now, Lipsius is still below the league average by about 10%.
Okay.
So I'm actually going to update it later tonight, so I'll be able to get – I put you on the spot there.
That's my fault, Jerry.
I usually get a backup of it so I can kind of compare it from the week before. So let me see. Let me bring that up.
Well, you looked that up. This is for Stan.
That ball is gone.
Such an old
time. For Stan there. Thank you, Stan, for the $9.99 on our super chats.
And as always, thanks to everybody for just coming here at all.
Yeah.
I did see Meadows had 109 mile an hour single today. Like, nice. He occasionally hits the hell out of the ball. I don't know if his average exit velo is up yet, but he can put a charge into it.
Yeah, and another thing too about the Mudhens that's been a recent trend as of late too is, as far as starting pitching goes, like the reason why I was so excited about Olofsgaard is that Toledo usually by the third inning or fourth inning, and it was the case this week in Erie too, which we'll get to a little later. By the third or fourth inning, usually it's either Buffalo or in the case with Indianapolis last week, the Mudhens have to fight back in every single game.
Yeah, I mean it's been a rough season for them, and they were like 8 games above 500 after April, and then they went 6-20 in May, and they are now 3-6 in June, I think. it's a lot of it has to do with that pitching, right? Like they're falling behind by 5-6 runs seemingly 3-4 times a week. It's just brutal.
Yeah, as far as even like for an offensive standpoint, that's why you kind of have to look at some of the numbers with like Justin Henry Molloy, who continues to struggle. We mentioned here 4-for-25, double home run, which is good, but the walks are not there like they were earlier in the season, and so that continues to be a theme there.
He just looks off balance to me when I've been watching him. It's like that dude who you go play softball with or wiffle ball with or whatever, who swings and like both of his legs come off the ground. Like it just kind of, that's what it looks like right now. He just doesn't look balanced at the plate. And I think he's a pretty talented hitter and I think he'll get it back at some point, but it's just, he's going through it right now. And it's lasted about 2 months, unfortunately, maybe 5 weeks.
Yeah. And you know what? There was interesting. I saw a comment today that was interesting because involving the catching situation right now, because the Tigers with Eric Hoskins struggling at the plate a little bit, you're wondering about what's going, you know, who's up next in Toledo, even at first base too. And somebody in the chat asked earlier, who's playing first right now down in Toledo? Yeah. I was like, wow, that's a good question. Cause
they've been spreading it out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
you got Knapp, you got Papirski, you got Lipsius playing some first base there.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly those three. I don't know if Donnie Sands has played any first base, but there is not a dedicated first baseman the way like we projected before Quincy Naporti got hurt. We thought maybe he'd be their regular first baseman this year, but there's certainly nothing like that this year for them. So maybe, who knows, maybe Jake Holton will get promoted. I was talking earlier about like, you know, you move Chris Myers and Justice Bigby up to Erie. Are they going to play over Jake Holton and his 130 WRC plus? It's like, that doesn't seem fair. So maybe he'll get boosted. I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, I think Danny Saray is also heading to Erie too, I think.
Oh, well, that's an interesting note that was not tweeted out, was it?
Yeah. Eat it. Yeah. I'm just joking. I'm not serious at all. No.
Danny Saray
might be also possibly heading to Erie too, but no, it's kind of a glaring position right now because the Tigers are struggling or getting, again, Torkelson's kind of struggling. You got both catchers, Rogers and Ha. So the next question becomes is who's the next man up? In reality, the Tigers might have to make a deal to get a catcher that's serviceable because down in Toledo, I mean, you can sit there and make the case for Andrew Knapp. Okay, maybe possibly, but he's been, as far as hitting wise, he's hitting .246 over the last month and with little power, two home runs. Papirski is batting a little better. I mean, Papirski could be, I'm not going to say he's serviceable. I mean, he's batting .288, but what you see is what you get. And same thing with Donnie Sands. So they don't really, this is kind of like it's an ongoing problem, Chris. I mean, this, and Jerry, I think you guys would both agree with this. We're going on almost 2 years here where Toledo really doesn't have an answer for you at catcher or first base. Like something, like a placeholder. I mean, the reason why I mentioned this too is because Dave Myers, who the Tigers let go, can play first and was playing first in Erie last year a little bit. Not to a degree, but Stan, as far as Soretti goes, that's what something I heard through my source that Soretti is going to go up to Erie. So that could be right. I could be wrong about that, but that was something that was not reported by Mr. Henning. It was something that somebody else told me. So
yeah.
Anyway.
But,
yeah, I know it seemed like they signed grabbed quite a few catchers for the minor leagues this offseason. So I thought they kind of recognized that problem and were working to try to solve that, but it doesn't seem to be working still.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, Knapp had a pretty good spring. Papirski was fine. He played in the big leagues last year, I think. We're going to get into some draft talk later, I think, because some of our questions were about the draft, and somebody mentioned it earlier. I think maybe it was Stan. Yeah. Yeah. Kyle Teal from Virginia. There's a scenario, we think, where if Dylan Cruz and Wyatt Langford go off the board 1-2, the Tigers would probably take Kyle Teal instead of Paul Skeens or the high school outfielders. And, you know, that would upset a lot of people, I think. But I think you can justify it as a above-average defender, left-handed hitting catcher who can hit for power. Like, that would be appealing to me as a Tigers fan, right? Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't hate having a left-handed hitting catcher who plays 120 games a year. But in any event, yeah, it's I don't know, we're kind of waiting for Dingler to make that the next step, but he's just kind of stagnated, it seems like, and who knows what's going to happen there. So maybe, I don't know, if something goes wrong, I think if there's an injury, we'd probably see Donnie Sands, right, because he's on the 40-man. But we've seen things, stranger things have happened before where multiple guys get injured or something goes wrong, and we could see Papirski or Knapp in the big leagues later this year.
Joseph mentions Dylan Paulson as far as a first base option, but he's at West Michigan currently right now.
Yeah. I mean, he would be a, if they just wanted a first baseman, he would be the org move, right? But I don't think his stats are particularly strong at West Michigan either, right? It's you're just, that's kind of just like we need a body at first base.
Yeah, and Stan, I would agree with you. Stan says in the chat, Dingler and Crouch's progress has been very disappointing. It's a regression for Crouch, for the sake of Crouch. But with Dingler, especially in spring training, you heard AJ Hinch talked about what he was working as far as like what he was working on and what to improve on. And we haven't really seen that. And so defensively, he's still a pretty good catcher down there, but it's, yeah, offensively, we'll get to that here in a second. But no, it's as far as what options are is concerned right now with Toledo, there's really not much. And that kind of leads us to Erie, because in Erie right now, they have, I mean, the call-ups will be, it'll be interesting to see if Myers, I think Chris Myers, who has been a really surprised as in terms of like just even his approach to the plate, he had a really good opposite field single. We saw him live last week. I really like him. And if he mashes at Erie, that would be a good development for the Tigers, because they definitely need some sort of late development with that. But yeah, no, Joseph, that's a good question. Yeah, if it was worth doing anything, not currently right now, unfortunately. But Erie this week against Bowie, every game I felt like Chris and I were like, as the game started, within 5 minutes, Chris goes, oh, Erie's right down 5-0. What is going on? To Bowie. And somehow they did not lose that much ground or gain a lot of ground. But Altoona came back and won today against Richmond. And so they remain a game up on Altoona, I believe.
You know, I didn't check the standings, but I can real quick. Yeah.
And Alex wants to know, is Chris Myers the next Kerry Carpenter? If Chris Myers can do at this level what Kerry Carpenter did, then totally a possibility. Because, I mean, the guy does hit for power. Outfield wise, he still needs some work, though.
He's only played one game there. We saw his first game in the outfield.
I know it's a work in progress, but he was playing left field, and it's a work in progress. But first base wise, he's perfectly fine. Getting to some of the Voodoo wants to know, anyone know what's up with Franklin Perez?
Yeah, he's pitched twice.
Yeah, he's pitched in the Florida Complex League, so we'll get to him in a little while. But yep, as far as Erie goes, Luis Santana had a really good week. And that kind of needed not hitting a lot of power, but he's still hitting pretty well in terms of hitting for average. Wilmer Flores' stats, if you look at his stats right there, pitching that one game, it doesn't seem like there's a lot to be said there, but I thought he still pitched pretty good. The umpiring was horrible. There was a call there that Chris posted on Twitter, and I'm going to show that here in a second. Jerry, did you see this, by the way?
Yeah, I unfortunately saw it, yeah.
Yeah. Gabe Alvarez had nowhere to go. And this is probably one of the best calls or best movement. I don't know. It's really cool to see when a manager's like, you know what? I'm out of here. I'm just going to walk out of here. I'm not going to throw the plate down. I'm done. So I'll find it here in a second.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot, like, from the beginning of that game, there were Flores had a really rough first inning. And it was, some of it was his own doing. He had a couple like wild pitches or miscommunications with Dingler. Trey Cruz kind of misplayed a hard hit ball to center field. It just wasn't a great inning, and he just got out of it like two pitches before he would have been done for the day. But even early in the game, like, it was clear that the ump was bad, and Greg Gagne even mentioned it, that in his previous outing he had missed 36 calls.
One that was not called a strike. That one.
I don't know what he saw.
Just staring in.
It's you know, I assume umpiring is hard, and this is a guy who apparently just can't see balls that are in the bottom of the zone.
Right, And someone just got run.
Was it Gabe?
And yeah, this is. I mean, Gabe had every right to lose his patience with this.
Yeah, and he had every right. He could have done it three innings before that. But keep
Go ahead.
I've mentioned it many times this season. The same.
I was just going to say, Greg mentioned that Alvarez really doesn't like to get thrown out this year because he's got a really young staff and he doesn't want them to like feel overwhelmed. He feels bad about doing it, but at that point, it was just too much for him to handle.
Pitches low in the strike zone all day.
Yeah, and as the guys mentioned in the broadcast, to Greg and Sam both, Erie has the same technology in their dugout that they do in the booth, so they can see the balls and strikes. So I don't know what the umpire saw. I mean, it's just
that one you can't miss.
That was a really, really bad call. But this is, to me, this is theater. This is great theater right here. He didn't, like I said, it wasn't like a Lou Piniella meltdown or anything. He just calmly walks off the field. And yeah, Flores got squeezed a little bit. So again, the stats say a little bit more. To me, I thought he pitched better than his stats. So it went into game.
Yeah, his stuff has looked better over the last couple starts. I think he hit 97 in that game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. Altoona has a one-game lead over Erie. It was just a tough week for Erie. And I put that little stat at the end of our slide when we get back to it. That a lot of it had to do with just not getting hits with men on scoring position.
Well, that's a new one.
That's great.
I've never seen a manager get tossed in Washington.
So yeah, if you go so center field out that beyond the center field wall is where the you can go back to the locker room and everything back there. And I'm surprised he didn't do that. Instead, he went.
He's gonna go under the hatch and grab a drink.
I thought he was gonna grab a hot dog or something. I don't know, but I think he's going around, and then you can go out the other way. You can go out the left out here. Well, and you can go through the complex that way too as well. But I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, typically when we've been out there and Greg will have us come back for, to interview the players, we walk through the outfield. It's right through center field to the locker rooms, the batting cages and stuff. But he probably didn't want to do that in the middle of the game. He may have considered it and then thought, no, all right. So, but there's no other way to get out of there unless you go up through the stands. So that's what he did. So, yeah, it was funny. And justified.
Unfortunately,
they couldn't pull that game out, though. But they did. They did win today, thanks in part to the efforts of Brent Herter, who has been their most consistent starter this year, right? And he had a rough outing on Tuesday, but was really good today, as you had there. Four innings, four hits, seven strikeouts, no walks, no runs, right?
Yeah, no walks, no runs. Pitched very well. I thought he was getting ahead of the batters pretty well. There's a couple times I think Bowie made him work the count a little bit, but. Overall, if it's just one of those things where he continues just to bounce back, it doesn't really, it's as far as like just consistency. And then, yes, as Joseph said in the chat, damn Cole Keefe, I see you. Yes, we all see him. He went 9-for-21 this week, hit .429. I don't think there's been a week he has hit under 500 or 400 in about a month. And yeah, he had a day off today. What was funny was, somebody told us in our Discord that he wasn't in the dugout. We're like, oh, wait a minute. He might have gone to Toledo, but ended up showing up in the fourth inning. So false alarm. But as far as, look, I'll just say this, and this is something that Mr. Henning will not know, is that essentially right now, for now, Cole Keefe's going to be in Erie for a while until they figure something out. But they are, I don't know, again, they're waiting to see if he passes the sniff test, if you will. But if he wins the first half championship, would not be surprised you see him in Erie not too long. But again, it also depends on what AJ Hinch wants. And Hinch wants him to play better defense too.
Yeah, you see a lot of people. Hinch was asked about him, I think, and he commented that he's going to continue to work on being a more well-rounded player. And so we see that quote thrown back in our face whenever we post a highlight about Cole Keefe, like, oh, I guess he's just got to keep getting more well-rounded. It's like, I don't know what you guys want, man. Like I'm tempted to stop tagging the Seawolves and Greg on any highlights of Cole Keefe, because I don't want them to be bothered by all the people getting upset.
Well, he's done a really good job of during the broadcast, him and Sam both have kind of been like the, hey, calm down folks. But it's funny because after a while, and Jerry, I'm sure you see this too, where it's, I mean, like, for example, the Eli De La Cruz stuff all week. I mean, he's been immediately make an impact with the Reds. But the build up to that, too, the crescendo, if you will, I'm sure Reds, like our buddy Doug Gray over at Reds Minor League Report, he's been there. He was telling me some of the names, you know, some of the numbers he's been getting there. Stan said it best. The better defense request is a red herring. It's such BS. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at it, but it's, again, until we hear from Scott Harris, it's kind of like we're up. It's just irresponsible speculation. And so one of the things that I will say about Erie this week, too, that was nice, and Chris did a really good job of posting, was Blake Holub, who, again, came out and just his, some of his advanced numbers in terms of spin rate and all that are phenomenal. And I think that as Chris, I think Chris is on to something about him being, he could potentially be a guy that Tigers may use at some point, either by the end of the year. I mean, if the I'm dead serious, with the bullpen being the way it is, anything is possible at this point. And he might, I think he'd be a better pitcher than anybody they have in Toledo right now.
It's definitely possible. Like, and so Jerry might appreciate this. I went back and I watched Holub last year just because, you know, it's one of those things when we get 2 or 3 weeks of action in Lakeland, I tried to watch everybody that was down there just to see him. And he looked interesting to me. It was an interesting arm. He just wasn't throwing any strikes. I was like, oh, well, that's, you know, most of the time guys don't get fixed from that. I shouldn't say most of the time, but it's seemingly rare. And then this year he's thrown nothing but strikes with the same stuff, and his breaking ball has gotten better. But I went back and looked at some of the data, and he had some fastballs getting 23 inches of IVB. Yeah, I mean, the average was more like 18, 19, but it's nuts because he's right over
the
top.
Even as a peak, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's insane. He's a guy who's interested in me just from that regard. And also what happened, just so happened that I was in West Michigan for opening night when they were playing the Fort Wayne, right? Fort Wayne 10 Caps, yeah. The San Diego. And the San Diego guys, we see these guys at every minor league stadium that every team has them. They're there to chart every single pitch with their little computer and put in all the data, and they get all the advanced stuff in real time. The San Diego guys were marveling at his IVB right behind me. I'm like, huh, well, this is good to know. There, it was like in like 1 inch of horizontal break. It's like a weird like cutter with 20 inches of ride. It's a really interesting fastball. And the secondaries have gotten better. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes relievers can move pretty quickly once they figure it out, right? So, so far, so good with him. Unfortunately, he was one of the few, like, really fun pitching stories in Erie this week. It was just a really strange week. You talked about it. Like, so Herter got knocked around a little bit on Tuesday. And then was it Wednesday was when we went out to West Michigan, right, Aurelio?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, and so we're looking, and Montero's pitching. And it's like double, double, single, single, double, 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 single. He's out of the game. 2/3 of an inning, 6 runs scored. You're like, oh, my God. And then the next day, the exact same thing happens with, was it Gibson Long or was it Madden?
I think it was Madden. It was Madden. Yeah, it was Madden.
They just kept doing it. It was like, man, they were falling behind in all these games. And they kept fighting back, but it was just not quite enough. And that's why I put that thing down there at the bottom, because through Saturday, they just couldn't get the big hits when they wanted to. That one game, they fell way behind and came back to lose 8-7, I think.
Yeah, but all was seven that, runs. Was that Saturday night? Or that the Friday, no, I think, was Friday night?
It was one of those, but they ended up, like, all the runs came on home runs. They went, like, 0-12 with runners in scoring position. It was weird. It was a really unfortunate week for them. You know, you host the worst or the last place team. You feel like you can come out of there with a series win and you go 1-5. But still only a game behind, still meaningful baseball to play.
No, and there was a good point here brought up by Voodoo again about the anyone concerned that the Tigers' best hitters like Carpenter and the top hitting prospects are all left-handed hitters. Yeah, there's kind of you can't help but notice it. No, it's something that's been kind of standing out. That's a good point. It's just you're hoping kind of reverses here with this draft. I think this is a draft under the radar. That I know it's, I'm not trying to sound like I'm being like trying to make it sound bigger than what it is, but it is kind of a big deal. This draft is kind of a big deal in the sense, because this is the first time we don't have the little feel of the fact. We don't have the drawing a blank now. So the David
Chad.
Yeah, we don't have the David Chad effect. We don't have the Oklahoma. They're gonna draft everybody from Oklahoma or from like the Great Plains states, or they're gonna draft somebody from LSU. It's not gonna be the case. It's gonna be a whole different process. And so I think this is a draft that they have to get right in the sense of putting the best foot forward. And Mark Connor has done a really good job with building drafts. And you can see those prospects in San Diego right now, they're percolating based off on his watch. So they have, I think to a certain degree, they have to get this right, because some of the bats are in the system that the Stan was talking about, 75% of the bats, some haven't been able to hit for power.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just feels kind of odd to me, because I felt like for years and years and years, the Tigers could never develop a left-handed hitter. Maybe it's just because they could never develop any hitters. It was like Granderson and Avila and Castellanos. And I guess two of them were lefties. I mean, all things being equal, I prefer to have left-handed hitters because most pitchers are right-handed. Now, lefties tend to struggle left on left more than righties struggle right on right. Except Riley Green and Colt Keith don't have any issues with lefties, so I'm fine with that. But I get more right-handed hitters. Get Wyatt Langford or Dylan Cruz. I'd be fine with that. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, just get some hitters. Period. I mean, it's just bottom line is that. That's why I'm so adamant when John on our Motor City Metrics podcast was talking about Paul Skies and people are like, you're nuts. You're not gonna take them. I'm like, no, they need hitting more than this team needs everything, but more importantly, they need hitters. So
yeah, I think it's an old kind of chestnut, but you draft hitters and you develop pitchers. We just talked about Hollow. We will talk a little bit later about guys you could probably get in the second or third round who might have as much upside as Paul Skeens. It's unlikely, you know, he looks so good right now, but you never know with pitchers. Cleveland does it all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's another organization that's developing pitchers pretty well is, I mean, I think the Yankees, I mean, they always seemingly, as far as international talent goes, developed some pitchers. I think it's Alex Warren. Is it Warren? It's
Adam Warren, is it?
Yeah, Adam Warren. Yeah, Adam Warren. The low key, I think the Yankees have done a good job developing arms.
No, I think you're right. I think there are a lot of teams that are. Seattle has done an excellent job of maximizing their pitchers.
We talked about the Brewers adding velocity.
The Brewers, God, we missed that game. We weren't there in person, but Jacob Mizorowski for the Brewers was sitting 98 to 100 with a wicked slider. The Whitecaps didn't get a hit, I think, until the fifth inning when Roberto Campos got a single against him. He was just dominant, and that's a dude they got in the second round last year. The arms are out there, man. It's half the players in baseball are pitchers, and most of them have a pretty good baseline of talent. And you just find the guys to maximize, and you'll be all right.
All right, so let's go through West Michigan and Lakeland. We still have the complex league before we get to the draft because it's quite a bit of show to go. Jace Young, he had two home runs in one game, but Chris Myers, who's heading the Erie, again, continues to have a good week. Dennis Reddy also had a good week at the plate. Roberto Campos, 6-for-19. And Carlos Pena had a good decent bounce back start. Troy Melton, who we saw in person, who went after Brisky, looked really good. And I charted was charting his pitches 95, 96 a couple times. Threw his slider, was throwing his slider really well. I thought he looked really good. That was one of his best starts. He was able to keep the Wisconsin off balance, and so definitely needed a good start for him. And Sergio and YouTube chat, word on the street is that Chris Myers is a first ballot Hall of Famer who needs some needed some hype.
Right. People love he's from Toledo.
Yep. I was gonna say the Mac love all day.
I mentioned very early in the show, I mentioned with Jerry that Chris Myers looks in much better shape than he did when they drafted him. He's just like a cut athlete now, whereas he had a little bit of baby fat in his face before. He's played really well. You hope he can keep it up. That'd be a cool story. I still don't know what to make of Jace Young, man. Like, every time I feel like he's the opposite of Pacheco for me. Like every time I see Jace Young, he's not doing much of anything. We have caught a couple home runs from him, but he has these occasional monster games or that monster week last week. And it's just like, it's never for us. And I when I watch him, I see him swing and miss through fastballs in the zone and swing over breaking balls under his hands. But the numbers are there for the most part. Like the WRC plus, I think is almost 140, 150. So I know people want to know when he's going to get promoted. I don't know. We don't know. We don't know when they're going to do this stuff. We don't know if they're happy with his production. We don't know if they have him working on something else. He walks plenty. I was mentioning to Jerry earlier, he's actually a very, I think a pretty damn good defender, though limited by his athleticism. Like, but other than that, he catches everything and he makes all the right throws and he's a heady defender. So.
As far as Scooble goes, he was efficient, looked pretty good. As far as Campos goes, somebody asked in our YouTube chat, Campos still hitting hard, no extra base hits.
You know, Campos is in a strange spot right now where he's still showing pretty good plate discipline. He's not expanding much. Teams are throwing him a lot of breaking balls because he hits fastballs. You throw him a fastball, he's going to hit it. I would mention that Jacob Mizrowski, he hit a fastball against him. I don't think you can really sneak a fastball by him. But, yeah, the swing is still not quite optimized for hitting a ton of power and a ton of extra base hits. And he's a guy who has some above-average bat-to-ball skills, I would say. So it's kind of like an old-school Tigers player where he's maybe not swinging at pitches that he can drive, but he's still making decent contact and finding holes because he's got good bat-to-ball skills. But, you know, down the road, he's going to need to probably turn that into more power. But he just – did he turn 20 recently, or is he still 19? I think we need to remember that with him. He's so young.
I still think he's 19.
I know he turns 20 in June. I don't know exactly the date, but I mean, he's one of the younger players in the Midwest League. So him staying afloat is impressive to me, let alone showing the kind of plate discipline he's shown. And he's certainly big and strong. It's just a matter of eventually getting, you know, the swing to where he needs to hit that power. And I wanted to dip back to Troy Melton because we saw his debut there and he was throwing a little bit harder and just didn't have quite the command. And this time he seemed to have dialed it down just one notch, still mid 90s, right? But he wasn't like 97. And the breaking ball, he got a fair amount of swings and misses, I think, with that 79 to 81 mile an hour breaking ball.
Yeah, I think he got five or six of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So he definitely looked like he was making progress and there's plenty to work with there. He's one of those guys, I think, that you could turn into something useful down the road because of the body works, the arm works. He's got four or five different pitches. We thought maybe he was throwing a 91-mile-an-hour cutter at times. I don't know. Like, he's fun to watch. So it's nice to have that there in West Michigan because most of the pitchers in the system are in Erie right now.
And one thing we did see that was kind of tragic in a way was we saw the last start of Chance Kirby, which – Chris and I commented after the game, wow, Chance Kirby, man. I don't know. He doesn't look the same. And this could be the last time we see him pitching. We're joking around. The next day, he retired.
Yeah. And that goes back to something Jerry and I were talking earlier about, like, these are people. They're out there playing. Chance Kirby was a huge part of Erie last year, was their MVP. Pitching MVP voted by his peers, goes back to Erie this year, struggles, gets hurt, goes down to West Michigan, and he didn't look good, got hit around. And I think, you know, maybe his heart just wasn't in it from the moment he got sent back to Erie this year. Who knows? Maybe it wasn't in it before that. But if you're not all the way in, it's going to be real tough to be a professional athlete. And yeah, he clearly was like, you know what, I'm done with this. So that sucks. It happens all the time, but it does suck to see, particularly when you see a guy who has performed well in the upper minors decides to just hang him up.
Yeah. I mean, best travel, or hopefully everything works out for him, whatever path he chooses. But it was, admittedly, that was just, it was brutal to watch in a sense because this guy, the curve, which was such a good pitch for him last year and got him out of Erie, or got him and Erie out of a lot of situations, just did not look the same. And so As far as Kreidler goes, still no real.
That's an odd one.
Yeah, I was just going to say, from what I've heard too, it's been all like just mum's the word, apparently. So, Alex, I wish I had more information, but the way it's been lately down there, it's been kind of like just little things get out, but nothing on Kreidler as of yet.
And Joseph asked where Matt Whistler is. He was pitching in Toledo this week.
Yeah, he didn't have a good week, though. This week, Matt Whistler in two innings of work, three hits, two runs, two walks, and three strikeouts. Comparatively speaking, for the last couple of weeks, I mean, that's actually not bad of a week, but comparatively speaking, what he's been doing that. So, that effect. All right, Lakeland, real quick, because Lakeland, Abel Bastidas, good week for him, 5-for-16. That was nice to see.
Hey, my sleeper.
Yeah, there you go. Your sleeper coming through. Dom Johnson continues to hit pretty well. And there's another guy you mentioned, Chris, the other day, Carlos Mercado and Connor Holman. Connor Holman had a really good week, too. And he was a guy who I believe was in an independent league signing, I believe it was. But, Jerry, if you have any of the data on those guys, yeah, feel free. Because I feel bad. I haven't said anything to Jerry in a while. But
yeah, sorry, Jerry.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. That's okay. No worries. You guys are good. Yeah, let me grab it here.
All right.
Oh, Aiden Zapata brings a Cole Peterson mention to the chat. Cole Peterson was an 80 grade defender at shortstop, legitimately one of the better defensive shortstops you'll ever see. Had 20 power and maybe 30 hit, and he was a speedy dude, but just not. He's a guy who would have made the big leagues in the 80s.
Yeah,
but not now. And yeah, I think he just, you know, at a certain point you realize like, it's just not going to happen, man. And it's gotta be so hard as a professional athlete for that when that day comes. But if Cole Peterson's out there, shout out to Cole Peterson for being so much fun to watch at shortstop.
Oh man. He had an arm too. He had a really good arm range too.
Yeah. He had an arm. He had a glove. He had speed. He just couldn't hit or hit for power, which is not a great thing when you're playing baseball, but yeah.
All right, Jerry, what did you
So, like with Dom Johnson, I'm looking at him compared to the league average up through last Sunday, and the guy's above average on everything. I don't know if it's time for him to move on up. You know, like we were saying earlier, you don't want to necessarily say that, but at the same time, I mean, he's got a 42% hard hit rate. The league average there is 31%.
Nice.
You know, and I do have to take it back. So he has 111 balls in play. And the league average for that is 114. So he is slightly below average there.
In terms of balls. But, well, I mean, yeah, I think that's the question with him, I think, is the strikeout rate is a little high. And I haven't checked the swing and miss, but I assume that's fairly high too. But he's definitely an interesting player. He's a guy who's intrigued me since they drafted him, but I could never quite like predict him to be a breakout guy because of those strikeouts. But he's like, I don't know, 5'9", 5'10", and built like a Barry Sanders style running back. You know, like really thick thighs, thick torso, but a plus runner. He's not stealing as much as Seth Stevenson, but he's probably straight line just as fast. And he's hitting the ball hard. So yeah, he's an interesting player. I worry about the swing and miss a little bit.
Yeah, it looks like he's striking out at a 27% rate this year.
Which is, you can live with if he's walking and hitting for power and stuff like that. But also, you're a college guy in low A. It's not great. But
right. That's, you know, when I look at this stuff, I try to kind of keep that stuff into mind. You know, if he's older, yeah, a college bat in a lower level, he should be kind of doing this, right? I mean.
Yeah.
But then so, I think it's so should Peyton Graham, their second round pick, and he's right. Yeah. Not. So,
yeah. So as we recall.
Not so much.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the advanced data on that too, on Graham, and it didn't look good at all.
He's just so skinny, man. He's just too damn skinny.
He's like the opposite of Dom Johnson in this case.
Yeah.
He's below average everywhere except for the balls in play.
Yeah.
But I did notice, sorry, not to cut you off.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I noticed Christian Santana seemed to improve his numbers from the previous week. So that seems encouraging with all the struggles that he's been going through lately.
I saw his average is it creeped up near 100. It was like 0.098. He had a home run and walked twice, I think. Yeah, I mean, he's a kid who, the thing I kept pointing out when I was doing the StatCast articles, when you're pulling that data for me, was that his launch angle or his sweet spot rate was just brutal. Like it felt like he was probably just popping up everything. And from right. watching him, we put up a clip of his, he had a terrible, no good, horrible, very bad week. And we put up a video of it, and it was just, yeah, pop up after pop up after pop up. So I think his swing is a little bit too steep, but he's certainly a very talented guy. Got, I think, the largest international bonus in Tigers history. So hopefully he's turning the corner, because that would, he's still very young. That would be a nice sign to see.
Yeah, I mean, before this week, he moved his heart hit rate up 3%. His sweet spot rate went up 3%. His barrel rate went up 1.2%. I mean, a lot of good stuff, things you want to see for out of him.
Yeah, especially because, yeah, the struggles I've been with him have been just – it's just a shame to
see. Feel bad for the kid.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I wonder if it's almost like a mental thing.
Right.
So let's last slide really is just the Florida Coast League or Florida Complex League and both Dominican Summer One is number two teams. And the stat that Chris found out that no one talked about was DJ Peters, who was an outfielder and probably maybe still is. I don't know. They have him listed as an outfielder, was pitching this week in the Complex League action. So Tiger signed back in December from the Dodgers. And I think he spent time in another organization,
the Rangers.
Thank you. And yeah. Nothing like there's been nothing about him on anything of like, just, it's almost like they stored him away somewhere and put him on ice or something. And then out of sudden, boom, you appeared in the box score.
Yeah. There's a clip from Motor City Metrics. It may have been pre name change of me geeking out about the Tigers getting DJ Peters. Because I always loved his tools. He was like, he's like an O'Neill Cruz level tools goof. Like he was a plus runner, like 6'6", huge arm, huge raw power, can't hit. So the Tigers, I think, made an interesting decision to take that big body and throw him on the mound and see what happens. And I'm really intrigued to see what happens with that. Unfortunately, it seems like whenever a player makes that transition, he eventually blows his arm out. They're just not used to the workload of throwing and pitching. So we cross your fingers that it doesn't happen to him this year. But, yeah, it'd be fun to see him maybe work his way up the ranks and maybe even see him in West Michigan pitching later this year.
Yeah, I mean, that would be ideal to be able to see. And, yes, Duque Ebert, which was in the World Baseball Classic for pitching for Team Nicaragua, made his first appearance in the Dominican Summer Team for the Tigers 2 team and pitched very well, 4 innings, 3 hits, 3 strikeouts. And what's unfortunate is we don't have any video of this at all because the Dominican Summer League is closed out to the public, and same thing with the Complex League. So if we see any video or somehow some miracle of God, fine, we get some video, we will post it as soon as possible. But yes, Iverson Leonardo does sound like all-star team to that. It's an all-star name. It is definitely all-name team. It's he got off to a good start.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know anything. Raylan Perez was tearing up the DSL last year, so we just like, hey, look at those cool stats. And so far, he struggled out of the gate this year. We know the guys who got bonuses. Josue Briseño was a catcher who got a pretty big bonus, and he's off to a good start this year in the Gulf Coast League or the Florida Complex League. Samuel Gill is off to a pretty good start, too, so that's nice to see. You had Fran Yerber Montilla in there highlighted. He was one of the 4 or 5 bigger signings from last year. He's still down in Dominican, but he's producing. Javier Osorio was the big signing. He's still a little bit iffy down in the Dominican. The only other thing to mention there was somebody brought up Franklin Perez. Franklin Perez pitched twice this week. The first time was not good. I think he gave up 2 or 3 runs. Last time he pitched was solid. I don't think he gave up any runs, maybe 1 walk, 1 hit or something like that, but he's still in the organization. We have no idea if he's throwing hard, if he looks good. I mean, you have to think the chances are really slim that you're ever going to get anything out of him, but he's still trying, so that's at least something.
All right. So we're going to end the podcast with talking a little bit of the draft. Just not, I mean, there's going to be probably a pre-draft show where we go into every single, I think we'll probably do a positional breakdown. But as far as what's going on lately with, especially with the College World Series around the corner, where some seasons are over, the one, I guess we could pick one person and talk about them real quick, and then we'll wrap this up. In terms of, like, maybe with the Tigers draft at 37, and there's one guy I wanted to mention as a somebody that could potentially be there, and I'm not sure if they would go with another, like, another bat or not, but this is a, now this sounds like a, perhaps a stretch at 37, perhaps, but maybe, I don't know. It was a name that it was, there's two names that I liked and that I wanted to talk about. First and foremost, another, because I think the Tigers are not afraid to draft high school bats because of who they have there. So one name that I thought that maybe might be there at 37 was a pitcher, might be Hurston Waldrip. I don't know, his draft stock is getting better though. So
yeah, I mean he was awesome the other day. I it wouldn't shock me if he goes off, if he's the second pitcher off the board. Okay. But you never know.
Yeah, because I was gonna even think of somebody like, for example, Charlie Soto, the, you know, out of
high schooler.
Yeah, 6'5", who's already looked like a built like a tank. But the high schooler that instead was another Colt Emerson, and he's
Ohio kid.
Yeah, Ohio kid, bats left. He's right in the neighborhood, and he has been making hard contact in terms of, like, just looks like a pretty good defender at shortstop too. So he's committed to Auburn, but I don't know. This is some, like, the way the Tigers have been unpredictable a little bit. Maybe I don't. But I watched a video of him the other day, and I was like, wait, who's this? And so those are two, if they're there. Hopefully. I mean, as far as the pitching goes, I don't know if that will be there, but runner up for pitcher wise, if he's still around, then maybe like a high schooler kid, like a Travis Sakura. That'd be nice too.
Yeah. You know, we actually got some questions and they kind of trended toward the draft. I don't know if we want to address those.
Yeah. Let's address those questions.
The first one was from Deadly Ninja Beast. The first was not the draft. He said, what does the crystal ball say about Trey Cruz? Does he have a future in the majors? And then the second one, if the Tigers take a high school hitter, how much money would that save them for their second and third pick? Who could slip to those picks? Trey Cruz, we talked about this a little bit, but Rod, you wrote an article about him. You talked to him. What do you think? What's the crystal ball hold for Trey Cruz?
I think there's a possibility he gets to the majors. I think because he's been able to make a really nice catch in the outfield. He's really good with knowing the spaces already in the outfield. And I think he can play multiple positions. He's a good utility bat. And I wouldn't have said that last year, but this year, as far as ball the bat skills have improved, he may have had a slow week, but I think if there's one thing, if he has a slow week, he comes back and picks it up pretty quickly. But the power numbers are there. The power numbers are significantly better than they were last year. And I think the tweaks he did make him a guy who you can see maybe come off the bench or – it's just maybe like, I'm not sure about an everyday starter, but I could definitely see him based off the bloodline too. That plays a large part of it too. And having your father is a good resource. His father was there this weekend. He was the head coach at Rice. So that was good to see. And like having those resources really go a long way.
Yeah. I mean, I think there were a couple big developments this year with Cruz. He's hitting for more power that he did before. He's always had that power there, but he's producing now because of some of the swing tweaks he made. And he's been playing a solid center field, which he was not doing. He didn't play any outfield up until this year, I don't think. And so if you've got a guy who has some power, who walks plenty, and can capably fill in at shortstop and center field, I think you have a big leaguer. I don't know if it's with the Tigers, but I think that's the sort of utility player that every team could use, because you can keep him on the bench and you bring him in, you pinch hit with him. He starts twice a week or whatever. And you can, and certainly the way, you know, AJ Hinch has managed this year, they've been mixing and matching guys all over the field. Trey Cruz is a switch hitter that adds more versatility. He can play third base, second base, shortstop, all outfield positions. I think there's a role for him in the big leagues. Not necessarily an everyday player, but I do think he's going to be in the bigs possibly as soon as next year. But I don't know. We'll see. I mean, Andrew Navigato is kind of a similar player. He's not a switch hitter. He's not – I don't think he's ever played center field. So I think that takes some of the luster away there. But, yeah, I think Cruz has got a chance.
We did get a question. Does he have a preferred sidewall hitting? I don't think he does. He didn't mention that when I talked to him about that before. So I think he said he really – from what he is – what I can remember based off how they use him in the lineup, he doesn't really – it doesn't have a preference, I don't think so.
Yeah, and to the second part of that question, I don't think – so the Tigers have the third overall pick, right, where the draft slot value there is $8.3 million or something crazy like that. I don't know if they're going to use all of that no matter who they take. Maybe if Dylan Cruz slices there, they'll spend it all on him. But I don't think you're going to get a significant haircut on either of the two top high school outfielders if they take them. Maybe a couple hundred thousand. I don't know if it's really going to help you that much. I think if they went the Kyle Teal route, they could potentially save $1 million or two because he probably doesn't have a home until the sixth or seventh pick or later otherwise. And that's, you know, it's the calculus there is like, do I take this now and still get more money than I would get three picks from now? Whereas like Walker Jenkins and Max Clark are probably going to go top five, top six, no matter what. So there's not really an incentive for them to take a big discount. But that leads to the other question where like, you know, who is going to be available there? And that was our other question from Epic D3C. He said, who do you guys want at picks 337 and 45? And Rogelio had already started talking about that. It's awfully hard to know who might be there in 37 and 45. But I don't know. Did you have a preferred choice of three?
If Langford or Cruz is there, then yeah. But if not, or if those two are going off the board, then I like Teal. That's what I like. I mean, I like to get a college bat. The reason why I said high school bat is because Mark Connor, this organization, some of the guys before are not afraid to take high school bats. So, Jerry, what do you have a preference for at three?
You know, I was listening to you guys on a podcast earlier this week, and you kind of convinced me of Teal. I'm really intrigued by him. And you know, it seems like there's been a lot of catchers taken early that have done pretty well. Like, I mean, it's hard to disagree with it, you know, and it's a college bat, so they're gonna come through the system theoretically quicker to help your big league team. And as we mentioned earlier, catcher's been not a great position of strength. So it just seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that that's the pick if you want to get kind of wild and you know, a big brained about floating guys down to your next two picks and trying to give them bigger bonuses. Ideally, I would like Langford at three, you know. If not him, I do like Jenkins. It sounds like the Tigers don't necessarily like the high school bats. I would like Jenkins if both the high school or both the college outfielders are gone. That's my preference. And then in those middle rounds, this is a pretty strong, or at least deep draft, I would say, for like middle infielders. Just, you know, Rogelio mentioned Colt Emerson. And there's just a lot of their, it's not, it reminds me of a couple years ago, the draft. They don't have the high end with Marcelo Meyer and Jordan Lawler that we saw, but like the depth is similar where the Tigers ended up getting Pacheco, like, you know, 30 picks later, and the Rays got Carson Williams and the A's got Max Muncy, and there's all these kids playing middle infield. And so I like this kid named Adrian Santana. He's a high schooler out of the Miami area who is a switch hitter, plus runner, no doubt shortstop. The only real question with him is how big and physical is he going to be? Is he going to hit from a tower? And to me, that's, you know, I guess that's a concern if he's getting the bat knocked out of his hand. But the reports early this spring were that he was showing more pop. So I'd like the idea of getting a high school shortstop. Those guys seem to work out pretty well sometimes. And then there's, and like to what we talked about and what Raj's point is, you can get arms and work on them and make them better. And there's a kid named Brandon Sproat who pitches for Florida, who actually was drafted by the Mets in the third round last year and didn't sign. And he's always had, ever since he was in high school, he's always had really good stuff. It just never quite worked as well as you had hoped. Like, his fastball's up to 101. He's got a plus changeup. His slider's above average. But it's never worked out. And the fastball might have, you know, it could be a shape issue where even, you know, it doesn't matter how hard he's throwing it, it's just not going to miss bats. But to me, that's a guy that keeps getting projected to be, like, outside of the top 30 picks. So, like, you know what? I'd take a chance on that guy with the 37th or 45th pick and see if you can figure out something there. But it's so hard to guess right now, right? We really kind of need to do it in as the draft is going on to say, okay, these guys are available. That's the guy I want. But it's hard to say right now.
Yeah, or maybe, like, if they wanted to please every Michigan State fan in the world, they go with Mitch Jeb, the 47th pick, or that third pick there. Because that guy, Mitch Jeb could be around, and he's got a pretty good hit tool. And then I saw some of his Cape Cod League numbers, and he hit really well. So
I think he may have been the MVP in the Cape Cod League, or he maybe won the batting title there. But yeah, he's a really good hitter, really funky batting stance and approach, kind of old school, just looks like he's aiming to slap it the other way. But he can hit, he's got speed, he can play shortstop. Probably he may be more of a, like, a, you know, play him everywhere. I compared him to McKinstry.
Yeah, they've probably seen faster pace, or
he's a very interesting guy who could go in that second or third pick range.
All right.
And Alex said, give me George Lombard. Yeah, George Lombard is a guy, he's the son of the Tigers bench coach. You'd like to think that they've got an in there, but he's a guy who really has kind of been rising up draft boards this spring, and it wouldn't shock me if he goes somewhere in the 20 to 30 range and the Tigers just don't have a chance to get him. All right, I mean, you could play hardball and say, like, nope, unless I go to play for my dad, then I'm not going to sign. But teams tend to call bluffs pretty well.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I dare you to turn down $3 million. Show me. So, anyway.
Yeah. It's gonna be, like I said, there's gonna be some interesting bats too in that later round too. There's, you know, Geno Groover, the third baseman out of North Carolina.
Lou James. Well, Deadly Ninja Base said, is there smoke about Teal to the Tigers? There were multiple reports that Connor and Rob Metzler were in Atlanta for when Virginia played Georgia Tech, and the assumption is they're watching Kyle Teal. Because, you know, he's a potential top 10 pick. There is another name, though, that they could have been watching, and Raj, you brought him up the other day. He's the younger brother of a current A's top prospect, and Jake Geloff, right?
Yeah, who hit a monster home run off Duke. I watched that whole game, and Virginia had no problem taking care of Duke on Saturday. And I thought he had his team record home runs, too. I think it was something to that effect. I thought it looked really good.
Yeah, I mean, he's a tooled up kid who hit for a lot of power in college, and they could have been watching him as their second, or, you know, their supplemental or second round pick. So it's tough to say. But as far as smoke is Teal to the Tigers, that's basically it. They saw there were some, you know, brass watching him play, and that's where you put two and two together.
Yeah, if you're thinking about, like, if a ninja smoke, like, you know, you put the smoke down to escape from people, then that could be the case where they could be throwing it. But, you know what's funny? You know, Chris, Jerry, I don't think it would surprise me if the Tigers went and got Max Clark and just, like, you know, like, just there's all this, like, there's just, I don't know, like, there just feels like if there's a vibe out there, like, they know who they really want, but no one knows except for one man, Sky Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we can do a lot of it's a ton of speculation, and part of it's kind of educated based on who they seem to be watching. But we've heard so many times about, like, guys got signed by team, and the kids were like, I never spoke to a scout from that team, I never saw anybody at my game, I have no idea that they like me, and they drafted me. It happens, usually not with, like, a top five pick, but who knows? We don't really have a good feel for how Scott Harris does anything yet. He's pretty quiet.
Well, that's the hard part. That adds to the complications of trying to make these predictions, right? Yeah. You don't know what they're going to do, so you can't even try to make an educated guess. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, yeah, we don't have any particular insight here. We do know some people who are in the amateur world, but basically we're basing everything off the mock drafts that everybody else sees, you know, Pipeline and Fangraphs and Baseball America. So we do our best, but we're going to sure as hell have a good show about it. I think, at least that's the hope.
Yeah, definitely. So draft show, July 9th, starting at 6:30 with the pregame pre-show was with Juper and John are going to be holding it down. And then we'll be starting at 7. And by then we'll have a better idea what's going on with the draft. And we'll continue. There'll be a couple articles this week dropping as we'll do some draft prospect coverage and what the Tigers potentially could look at. In terms of player profiles will be out this week and more. So go to TigersMLReport.com. And I think we covered everything this evening. We'll be back on Sunday. I will not be here next week. Jerry and Chris will be holding it down next week as I will be in Oscoda. We're taking a vacation and with the family. So it's our annual family trip. So we're doing that. So I'll be out and Chris and Jerry will field all your questions. And of course, the Brett Hurler story will be up tomorrow morning. Just have to finish editing it, and that will be available for your consumption. So, myself.
Yeah, nice. I did. Okay. I added, we put the Melton one up. We got Montero start, Sawyer Gibson long start from recent. I'm going to put Flores' outing up just so people can see it. There are two last questions here. Harrison Garrett said, how many rounds are in the draft? There are 20. It's 20. A 20-round draft for going forward from now on. And the Deadly Ninja B said, how does Max Clark compare to Corbin Carroll? Which is fun because they are both, you know, lefty, shorter lefty hitting high school outfielders. Corbin Carroll is pretty awesome, despite his, I'm not crazy about his facial hair and his hair, but whatever. I sound like a whole person. Max Clark is actually a better defender, I think, than Corbin Carroll. Nobody really saw Corbin Carroll hitting for the sort of power that he has. So it's really tough to say, and that's kind of the question mark about Max Clark, just based on his size and his lack of projection. He's basically maxed out already, no pun intended, at you know, like 6 foot 185 or whatever. But they're fairly similar players. Like I've made the comparison before. Like you can hope that he's Corbin Carroll, but he also might be Mickey Moniak. You don't really know. So and Clark has a better arm. If everything goes to hell for Clark, he could probably pitch. He's been in the low 90s with his left arm. So, in any event, that was, they're fun to compare, but it's tough to say.
Fair enough. Because, yeah, it's going to be interesting, nonetheless, as the rumors heat up. So, we'll talk to you next Sunday. These guys will be joining next Sunday. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.